Today's program is brought to you by Korin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit korin.com.
I'm one of HRN's interns, Nina Medvinskaya, with a preview of the next episode of Meat and Three, our weekly food news roundup. This week's topic? The marriage of food and danger. Sometimes, danger lurks in the food that we eat.
So instead of saying what is poisonous, I'd rather say what's not, because it's literally just the flesh and the fins.
Food poisoning doesn't just threaten our bodies, but it endangers our environment as well.
The emissions of JBS, combined with the other top five meat companies, exceed the annual emissions of Exxon, Shell, or BP.
For more, tune into this week's Meat and Three on Heritage Radio Network, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, and welcome to A Hungry Society. I'm Korsha Wilson, and this is the show where we talk about food, food media, and so much more. Today's guest is Scar Pimentel, the founder and owner of Scar's Pizza on the Lower East Side of Manhattan. It's probably the coolest pizza shop in the city, and it serves one of the best slices you'll find in the city, period. Pimentel grew up in Long Island City. And
uptown.
Then just uptown.
Uptown most of my life, yeah.
And then?
Lived in Long Island City just for a little bit and went to high school there.
Okay. And you worked at some of the best pizza shops in the city before you opened Scar's.
Correct. You want me to name them? Or?
No, not yet. We're going to get to that. But welcome to Hungry Society.
Thanks for having me.
So I'm really happy to have you here. We have like a whole pizza sitting in front of us right now from Roberta's. You, like I said in the intro, you make one of the best slices in the city. Okay. And that's not just by accident. Like I said, like you've worked at some of the best spots.
I've worked in a bunch of spots making, and a lot of people assume that I just hired people. I don't know why, but I'm always in my shop, always overseeing everything. So, yeah, I mean, experience pays, you know?
Yeah. And you have a ton of pizza experience.
Yeah. I opened up the shop at 30, 35, I think, yeah. So I opened up kind of late, so. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, where I've worked in, mostly, I've worked in one Italian restaurant and mostly pizzerias the last, like, 15 years.
And you opened up to rave reviews. Like, not that I was looking for bad reviews, but.
No, we got one, they want to call themselves a big publication. I'm not going to name them, obviously, but you could see it on Google when you Google us. I don't know why. You know how it is in food politics. You don't play their rules or buy their games. They want to.
Yeah.
You know.
We'll get to the food world in a minute. But let's go back to where did you grow up in New York?
So as a kid, I grew up in Long Island City, Astoria, kind of, but mostly Long Island City. And then I moved to. So my parents, when I got a little older, 13, 14, I didn't like living with my mom and. Myself. Not that, you know, rebellious kid, so I ended up living with my grandmother in Harlem. Mm. What they call Harlem, but we call it Uptown, but technically, growing up here, like people that grew up here, they would know, like Harlem is more centralized. I was all the way on the west side. We just refer to it as Uptown, but it was, you know, 138, you know, between 135th Street or 145th Street and Broadway in Amsterdam.
Okay,
so. That little area. They call it Hamilton Heights now. We never call it Hamilton Heights, you know.
Yeah.
Part of new New York, you know?
I've always been curious about the distinction between Harlem and Uptown, because Harlem is technically Uptown, but, like, where does that line?
We referred to Uptown, like, from I'd say 125th Street. Well, a little low. On the east side, it was a little lower, because on the west side, below 125th Street, it's, like, Morningside Heights.
Okay.
It's mostly Morningside, like, say, but, like, once you get east of Broadway, from, like, 125th Street all the way up to the top of Manhattan is considered Uptown.
Hmm.
We always call it Uptown. But Harlem is east of Broadway, 104, 105, I'm guessing.
Okay.
All the way up to the tip, yeah.
That's good to know.
Yeah. Because you remember, you got Columbia University over there by 103rd.
Right.
So, and that's not really, we don't consider that Harlem. But on the east side of 103rd is kind of like Uptown. We consider that Uptown.
Hmm. Awesome. And you and I met because I was working on a story about pizza, And your shop kept coming up. And everyone I talked to was like, you know, the slice is really, really good, but you should go to the shop and see it and experience it and, like, feel what it's like to be there.
Yeah.
And I have to agree, like, the pizza is amazing. The pizza is really good. But
continue. I'm sorry.
That's okay. But it's also, like, a very unique atmosphere. How would you describe the atmosphere of Scar's
Pizza? The atmosphere I'm used to that atmosphere because I grew up here. But to the person that didn't grow up here, they might consider it something along the lines of, oh, it's like a Disneyland version of mid-century, or they're trying to create something that isn't, because they don't really know who the owners are, because I don't really promote myself as a person. Like, I don't really promote myself as the face of the, even though it has my name, I'm not really, I keep to myself. Mm-hmm. I always kept to myself, so I'm not really there. So they don't, they think the owner's some, not someone from, like, middle America that just moved to New York, like a hipster owns it. I get that a lot. I'm not a hipster at all. Like, I'm like, I don't know where that came. But that's amongst, you know, people that grew up here too that think of hipsters. It's not. I'm a street dude. Like, it's what it is, you know.
Why do you think people think it's a hipster pizza shop?
They just want to throw that term around. Right. Everyone throws that term around, from hood people to gentrified. Everyone, like, hipsters themselves calling other people hipsters. It's weird. I don't know. They just love to say that word. You know, I didn't even know what it was for a long time. I was like, what does that mean?
I know it's not, I would know it's not a hipster pizza shop because on your bar you have white Hennessy.
Henny White. It's pronounced Henny White.
Oh, pure Henny White, sorry. Which I am a big fan of.
And we also got Ciroc and we also have Hypnotic.
Right. Henny White, you can't get a lot of places in the
that?
States.
How'd you know that?
My family is, my mom's side is Caribbean.
Okay.
And at
Barbados?
My wedding. No.
Bahamian?
No. I thought you were going to keep guessing. No, the Virgin Islands.
Virgin Islands, okay.
And at my wedding, actually, our after party, we passed around. My friend from Barbados brought up a Henny White.
Yeah, but it's a different label, though, from that area. Everyone goes for the ones from DR, yeah.
Okay.
That's everyone's favorite.
Wait, it tastes different too?
The labeling's different.
Different.
A little different. You could spot it. But they also assume that it's a different Henny White. But, like, the one that we drink, like, uptown is really from Dominican Republic.
But, like, you don't see it on bars a lot.
They don't sell it anymore.
Right? But the fact that it's on your bar lets me know that it's not, you know what? I'm not going to say hipster. I'm going to say lets me know that it's not white owned and that it, or if it is, the person knows.
I mean, it's not only, there's all the little subtleties that people pick up on when they come in the shop that's not, like, in your face. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know people come in, and, like, we have a Paid in Full poster. That I love that movie. That's one of my favorite. Belly's one of my favorite. I don't think Belly was an amazing movie, but it was, it represented us.
Yeah.
You know, it was, like, represented my culture growing up. And we also have, like, Nick stuff, paraphernalia and stuff all over. But, you know, there's little subtle things in there. I don't try to, like, overdo it. I don't try to put photos of my family on the wall and stuff like most places do. Or what's it called? The chokies? Those little funny things that people put everywhere. Tchotchkes.
Oh, tchotchkes, yeah.
Yeah, tchotchkes. They put that all over. I don't do that either. So, like, I usually put my friend's stuff. Like, if you see an art piece, that was my friend's art piece.
Okay.
I didn't buy it or anything. They gifted it to us, and they're actually a good friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
That put up, like, either photography or whatever. These are people that are, like, good friends of mine that I've known for years that's their artwork that goes on my walls. I don't put random people's artworks or buy it and put it up there.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather represent my friend's stuff than anything else.
You had in Scar's Pizza, there's a picture of Big Pun.
That was given to us by, so one of our good friends, Shady, the people from downtown know him very well. He used to, when Supreme first opened up, he was their first camera, like, video. He did all the first videos for Supreme like 20 years ago. I would see him around for a long time in downtown because I used to hang out and work downtown a lot for during the last like 20 years. So I would always see him, and he was living in Olita at the time, and he's friends with people I know as well from that area. So we hit it off. We actually met, funny story, at this restaurant that's now closed, and he came with his girlfriend. And he brought this funny little banana boat bike with, like, I remember, with American flag, like, seat and seat, like, you know, and he left it outside upside down. So I told him, I was like, I know you grew up here. I don't think it's a good idea to leave your bike unattended upside down outside the shop. He's like, no, I'm good. I'm good. I was like, okay. So he said that. He sat down. And next thing you know, his girlfriend's like, oh, my God, they took the bike. And someone stole the bike from outside. And he ran out the restaurant by himself. And I wasn't going to leave him alone. I didn't know if the guy was like, whoever stole the bike was with three. He like literally darted out there. So we went down Kenmare. I remember this is yesterday. Made a left on Elizabeth. He's gone. Like him and this guy are gone. He chased the guy down on the bike somehow.
What? Another bike and chased the...
No, he ran on his... He ran. He like flew down
caught
there.
Up with caught the bike?
Caught the guy, yeah.
Wow.
So he didn't realize there was another guy behind him that he was with. It was like some like dirty ass skaters, like bum kids that stole it. So then he grabbed, I mean, obviously the kids didn't know who the bike belonged to. So he when I caught up to them on Spring and Elizabeth, Shady's already punching this kid in the face. It's like, they didn't be like, you know, Shady grew up in the Bronx. So it's like, you know, even though he doesn't act hood, he's still like, you don't, they say, tell people, you could take people out the hood, but they're still hood. You know what I'm saying? It's like, he's still hood, you know? So he was like knocking this kid out. And I'm laughing. And then this other guy was coming up from behind him, trying to hit him with a skateboard. So then I choked up. I went from behind. I think I hit the kid or I choked him up and threw him on the ground or threw him around. And then they both just ran off. Somehow they both like rode three. There was a third guy too. I don't even see him. And they all ran off.
Wow.
And then Shady thought I was with them. And I'm laughing there. And I'm like, he's trying to hit me because he's in like knockout. Mm-hmm. Like knockout mentality. Like knockout Jenkins mentality. So I was like, I was like, yo, I'm not with him. It's me. He's like, oh, okay, my bad.
So this is who took that picture.
He took that picture. He's a big videographer. He took a picture of Big Pun. That was Big Pun's first video.
Wow.
And he directed his first video.
Wow.
And he has a bunch of stills and he gifted us that still.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I just wanted to give
some context. No, I feel like talking to you, if it was printed on paper, mm-hmm. it would need like asterisks for like people who aren't from New York, like, you know. What do some of these things mean?
Yeah.
Like, you are, like, very much a New York person. Like, it's just...
But it's funny. I'm a New York person, but a lot of people don't see that. A lot of people do see it, but a lot of people don't. It's weird. It's like a lot of people have that. I feel like a lot of people now, due to the internet and social media, they have their own interpretations of what New York City should be. That's the way I feel, and that's what I've seen. They don't understand, or they have, if you're from New York, they're like, everyone's from the projects, and everyone's hood, and everyone's going to rob us. Like, kind of that feeling. They're, like, threatened by us for some whatever reason. And it shows in, like, when I've worked in restaurants, and I've worked everywhere, and it's that's what it is. You know, it's evolved to that point, I feel like, in my opinion. But, you know, not everyone's so insightful. And these are people, like, I'm talking about people that are, like, they've lived here for 10 years, like people that work in newspapers, food media, like all the people I've interacted with, it's like weird. They think, I don't know, they have their own, everyone has their own interpretation of what New York City should be.
Yeah.
I feel like. Or what it is currently.
Yeah, and we, so before we started recording, we were talking for a second about food and food media and how small the world can be sometimes and how people kind of act kind of weird. Is that what you're saying? Like sometimes people can act... a little funny.
I just think a lot of people aren't, to put it in, like to go back to the beginning, I feel like a lot of people don't have a lot of social skills. So when they move to the city, these are kids that aren't athletes, that aren't like, I'm not saying being an athlete makes you a social butterfly, but I'm just saying like it forces you to interact when you're in high school or middle school. Like when I was in high school and I played baseball for a little bit, I was forced to interact with my baseball, the kids I played from all shapes and forms, kids I grew up with. When I played basketball, I was interacting with kids from the projects, most of my friends were from the projects when I was growing up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like when I was playing baseball, I was playing with most of the hood kids from my grandmother's neighborhood in Uptown, you know? It's you're forced to interact, mm-hmm. put it that way. And you can't, and you learn, so you know, viable social skills that'll affect you, that'll help you actually grow, you know, throughout your life.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these people don't do that. They don't have that. They don't even... I've been in the middle of America a bunch of times, and your neighbors don't even say hi to you. It's like weird. It's like, this is so weird. We lived in my grandma's apartment building, 60, 70 apartments. We all knew each other. We all said hi to each other. We helped everyone with their groceries. Like, people sat outside on stoops. They don't, like... They come from that world where they don't say hi to each other. Like, always scared of, like, if you don't know that person, ignore them. Like, just leave them alone, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Don't bother them. So they don't develop those social skills. And what they develop is there's a lot of people that are selfish in this industry. If they do, and I feel like a lot of them too, they do something for charity. Like now it's Christmas time. I'm cooking one day at the mission. That's my charitable thing for the next 5 years. And they put it on Instagram. They got it all over. It's BS. I'm like, why don't you do that all year?
Hmm.
Why do you only have to do it once a year? because it makes them personally feel better, and they also want the attention that comes with.
Right.
You know, like I've donated money. I've done mad stuff. I don't promote it. Mm-hmm. You don't see it on my Instagram. I don't talk about it. I've never talked about it. You know, but these people that we deal with now, they literally will do anything for attention. Mm. Literally anything for attention.
The neighborhood thing you were talking about is so interesting, because when I went to Scars for the first time, mm-hmm. it very much felt like a neighborhood spot and everyone knew each other. And I've been there since, and even at nighttime, like, people are saying hi to each other, like, over the bar in the back, or, yeah. like, people buy a whole pizza and sit down with their friends in the back. Like, it feels like a neighborhood spot. So you've, like, put that mentality into your restaurant that yeah. you want to see.
And I have to, because we're a small spot, a lot of people feel intimidated when they go, for whatever reason, when they go in there. And no one's going to curse at him. No one's going to, like, you know?
People are attractive in there. Like, I've noticed, like, there's a high percentage of, like, like, modelly type people.
But we make everyone feel comfortable.
Yeah.
I don't, like, it happens. The clients that we have, it happened natural, organic and natural. Mm-hmm. I didn't go out and say, like, yo, hire, like most places do, go to a nightclub, get a promoter, bring all his model girlfriends into my restaurant. We'll comp them everything. That's what all these people do. People don't see that. I don't do any of that. What am I going to come? $3 slices? $4? Like, are you serious? You know, I don't have anything to give them. I'm not going to give them anything either. So it's like people come in. Girl, and like on top of that, we actually do use mostly organic ingredients. Mm-hmm. The only thing that's not organic is our mozzarella cheese. So the girls know that. Like, they all know that. It's word of mouth. They do their research. They're not stupid. Mm-hmm. Like grains, if you eat something using flour or grains and it's done the right way, it's actually not nutritious for you. Bread isn't supposed to be bad for you. Mm. You know, so, I mean, they're smart. They know that, and they come in there. I don't promote it, but, you know, it's all word of mouth. Mm-hmm. You know, and everyone, you know, like I said, the staff treats everyone like family. No matter who, color, creed, whatever, everyone gets treated the same.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked a lot about the atmosphere, but the pizza is amazing, period.
Yeah. I mean, I put my blood, sweat, and tears into it. People don't understand, believe me either. Like, when we say we mill our flour, people don't believe me. Mm. When we say we buy a flour that's literally a month old, people don't want to believe it. People be like, there's no way he's doing this. There's no way he's doing that. How do you know there's no way? I'll show you my kitchen. I'll show you invoices. I'll show people, like, this is what I pay for my tomatoes, my flour, my cheese. Your favorite pizzeria, the one you say it's amazing, which is trash, tell them to show you an invoice. I'll show you mine all day. Right. This is what, from day one, from the day we open, I'll show you what we've been paying. I got my Amex statement, says show them. They won't do it. Nobody right. will do it. You right. know, I'm not doing it. I'm not. Like I said, yes, everyone opens up a business to make money, but I don't try to squeeze every penny out of my business.
Right.
I'm not about that. Mm-hmm. I'm about changing culture and making people eat better. You know, that's more of a lasting impression than trying to make money, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So,
are there plans to open more Scars Pizzas in the future?
I mean, it's funny, when we first opened, no one was open. The last like 6 months to a year, we've been offered a lot of like opportunities, but I'm actually thinking of just doing another one in Miami with my family. We might be doing that, but that's in the, you know, I thought about LA for a sec. It's not easy. I don't have a lot of help. You know, people think it's a small shop, but it takes a lot of work,
right?
You know, to make sure, like, I'm there every day at the shop. I know people are like, oh, I don't see you anymore. I'm like, yeah, I used to make all the pizza the first year. So I'm like, yeah, I'm not there making pizza anymore, but I'm there during the day, like Monday to Friday. Right. I'm there every day.
You're running the business.
Yeah, Monday to Friday and the weekends too. You know, if I wasn't married, I'd be there 24/7, but I got to spend time with my wife. So got to be fair to her too, you know? Mm-hmm. So
there might be potentially
There might be something big too. I'm thinking about doing something else that's bigger than this, that's okay. pizza related as well, but we'll see. I don't want to jinx myself
either. Yeah, you don't want to talk about it too early.
Yeah.
Because you never know.
Yeah, we'll see.
So I always talk to my guests about their history with dining. Did your family have any dining traditions growing up? And feel free to jump into
the dining traditions. Well. I'm smelling the Sopressata right now.
I'm actually going to jump in.
We, dining experience in terms of me working in a... Me working or just going out personally, going out to eat?
Either one.
Well, going out to eat, or actually at home with my parents, we were like, we didn't have any money, so.
No, you're fine.
So we didn't really go out. Like, going out to eat, like, for us was going to McDonald's when we were kids. Mm-hmm. Well, my dad's favorite Chinese restaurant. So we didn't really go out and eat. Ooh. Sorry.
No, you're fine.
I had like a peppercorn widow. That's hot.
A lot of my guests say, you know, actually like.
We just ate at home.
Yeah. There was a lot of eating at home or fast food was like a treat. Yeah. Like a special occasion.
So my mom wasn't really strict rules with her. But like we would eat in front of TV in the living room and stuff. She wasn't. My grandmother was really strict. Like I come home from whatever. I knew I had to be there for dinner at 6 o'clock. Like, yeah. My grandmother doesn't play. She hates when I come in late. She'll call me. This is when I was with my grandmother, 15, 14, like, from that point. And when I got home, the first thing I had to do was take a shower. You're not going to eat at my table, dirty, she would say in Spanish. Yeah, I was like, okay, you got it. So me and my cousins would come, because I lived with my cousins as well. Mm-hmm. We'd take turns, get showered. If we were going back out, we'd get dressed to go back out, obviously. We would always. It was kind of annoying, because I'd, like, go in. I'd prefer to eat and go back out to the street. So I'd have to shower like 3 times a day. So come in, shower, eat dinner with my grandmother and my cousins and my aunt, and then leave, go out again and come back home. But yeah, the tradition's always like eat. And then after you finish eating, wait for the cafecito, which is an espresso. Mm. Wait for your coffee. Then do we call it a greca. It's like a espresso coffee maker, but like the old school ones, the ones you twist. The Italians use it too. It's like those single. It looks like those twists. You cook it on. It's a countertop espresso maker.
Yeah,
with the flame.
Yeah. We actually, I have 2 of those at home.
Yeah,
they're easy. They work.
They work. Yeah, it's perfect.
Yeah,
my aunt or my grandma would do one big pot, and then we just split it, drink this, and keep it moving. That was our dessert. Wow. The women would sit back and just talk shit and gossip about everything, and then we just keep it going. Keep it moving.
What was dinner like? What did she like typically make?
Like family style. Like she would make. Wasn't meat every day. Thank God. Like a month, she'll make shrimp, something with shrimp. And, oh, rice was like, rice and beans was always, and avocado. Always. I've been eating avocado since I was like 5 years old, before the craze of the avocado craze. But it was always rice, beans, avocado. Mm. It was either rice and bean, like, mixed, they call it moro, we call it, or rice and beans separate. But always with different kind of beans every other day. Chicken. She'd do a roast chicken, she'd do a baked chicken, then she'll do a whole baked chicken, or then she'll do like fried steak with red onions, like bien saboreado, then she'll make something else, like a pork chops, and she'll make, you know, then she'll do a fish mm-hmm. once a week. And then like Sundays, she'll take all the scraps and make like a stew, we call it sancocho. She'll make a sancocho at the end of the week with it, or chicken soup of some sort. With
and
the
your grandmother was Dominican, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She came here, I think she came here like in 1968, 67, if I'm not mistaken, maybe 69.
Wow.
Yeah. I think she lived somewhere else prior, and then she saved up money or had money, I don't know. And then she got the apartment that we still live in Hamilton Heights. Sorry, it's a new term
Hamilton
for me.
Hamilton Heights, yeah.
It's a new term for me. Hmm. Yeah, so they live there now. They still live there. We've been there for over 50 years now. Mm-hmm. I mean, the people that still live there, there's only like 2 or 3 tenants that still live in that building. The building's like turned over a bunch since then. But
yeah. And when we first met, we talked about the role of like pizza shops in your childhood. Like, you know, if you had a couple of dollars, you would go get a pizza slice, maybe get some ice cream.
Italian ice, no ice cream.
No ice cream?
Italian ice is, yeah.
Italian ice, okay. Yeah. But it was like a good, cheap way to like fill yourself up growing up.
Well, the snacks always with us, my grandma, we were little kids growing up. My aunt would always, they make us get it too. There was a Cuban diner on 138th Street in Broadway called La Flor de Broadway. They're still there. They're still around, but they moved like half a block down. And across the street was a pizzeria called Theo's back in there. And Theo was, I think, a Greek guy. He was friends with my grandmother. And my grandmother talked to him for a minute, whatever. We get, you know, we go down and say, pizza was great. It was really good. Mm-hmm. I always get Theo's one day. And then the next day, I'd get a steak sandwich or a Cuban sandwich from across the street, which was amazing, too. Not anymore, but it used to be.
Mm-hmm. And that's like such a New York thing too, right? Just like the all the different kinds of food that you can have on like one block.
I had Greek food growing up. I had Italian food. Actually, Italian food, I got into it more when I became older. When I met my best friend's mother, she was a great Italian chef. Like, not chef, but like made great Italian food at home. Mm-hmm. And that was like when I was like 12 or 13. And then when I started working in an Italian restaurant, which is funny, now it's like a celeb hotspot. They used to have, they always had celebs, but now it's like, ever since Obama ate there, everyone's like, oh, we got to go there and eat. But it's great. Don't get it wrong. Don't get me wrong. It's really good.
Where do you go eat when you're not working?
That place, still, Bellotto's. It's on Houston Street. I eat there a lot. I took a little break throughout the years, back and forth, but it's like, it's to be honest, it's the only, in my opinion, the only good red sauce American Italian restaurant left. Mm. Especially Manhattan, I feel like. That's actually good. Not that it's open, it's actually really good.
Have you been to, like, Carbone or anything? Like, what do you think of those big, blown out, like, newer sort of red sauce places?
I've been to Carbone.
I've heard it's I haven't been because it's expensive. Mm-hmm. But I'm just curious what you think.
I don't remember. One of my best friends works there. I can't say. It's not better than Bellotto's. I could say that.
Okay. That's fair.
Just coming from a guy that grew up eating Italian-American food. So
right. You're very
not rustic Italian, like New York Italian.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I
also go to... I go to my buddy Emmett. He owns a pizzeria. I go to a lot, believe it or not, I still go to a lot of pizza places outside my own.
You're not sick of pizza?
No. If you grew up here, you never get sick. You'll get sick of it for one day, but I never get sick of it, like, ever, really. Mm-hmm. I love pizza. I go to Emmett's. It's the only Chicago deep dish pizzeria in the city. But he also serves, like, a great burger, like, great good salads, great food. People don't really... It's funny because he doesn't get a lot of press, but he's busy as hell all the time.
Mm.
Yeah.
Like, and it's just uses, one of those standby, yeah, like,
he uses organic ingredients. People don't know that he don't... I told him to promote it. Because the thing is, I was like, yo, dude, if you're using organic sauce and organic flour for your deep dish pizzas, all the pizzas, promote it. Mm-hmm. People assuming because it's deep dish, especially in New York, that you're using trash to make your food. Because that's basically what they use over. Oh, someone. So that's what basically someone's using. I don't know. So... I told him to start promoting it, and he's like, I'm going to. And now it's been like a year later, and he still has promoted his product.
I feel like New Yorkers also, like, you know, don't just kind of have like a prejudice against deep dish as a style of pizza. Because they prefer thin crust.
Yeah, they prefer thin crust. It gets a bad rep. I think the deep dish is great. I don't eat a lot of it, but I think it's a good pizza. It doesn't taste bad. I don't, you know. I go for flavor more than anything else. So
tell me your favorite slice or pizza places besides Scars.
Raza in New Jersey.
Yes, I went there for my birthday. Really good.
Yeah, Dan. I didn't know Dan when I first went, and then I met him over there, and just organically we met. I met him, I think, in passing at an event or something, like 2 years ago, 2-3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we went in, you know. I was like, all right, I got to try it. And then when we were planning on going in, it was funny. Me and my friends, we were like, all right, well, let's go to Raza. We got to go. I heard great things about it for years. Let's go. And then that same week, he had like a 3-star New York Times. I was like, fuck.
You're like, I'm never getting in there.
No. Yeah. And we waited like a month after that. We had to wait another extra like month or two. And then right. We're like, all right, let's go now. And still, he had a 3-hour wait there. But we waited like an hour. We didn't wait that long. But he still had a long wait. And the first time I had it, I was like, I'm not a big fan of wood-fired pizzas to begin with.
Mm.
No, never been. I just don't like the droopiness of it. And like another thing, the fresh mozzarella. Especially for people that are lactose intolerant, eat a lot of it because it doesn't. That fresh mozzarella isn't really good. Not that it's not good for you. It's not.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot harder to digest because the cheese is fresh, the curd is fresh, so you don't allow it to sit down and allow the enzymes to break it down for you, so it doesn't become digestible. So it's not really that easy to digest. So I wasn't really a big fan of the fresh mozzarella, even though it tastes good.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't a big fan of that. I didn't grow up eating it, you know? I'm more of a New York style gas oven or a coal oven guy.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, we went there, we ordered a bunch of pies. It was amazing. It was like, wow, this is really fucking good. Mm-hmm. Like everything, the panna cotta, the bread and butter, like everything was great. I had a great time. That's one of my favorite spots. Le Industry, Williamsburg.
Okay.
It's like he makes Roman style pizza by the slice. But it's Roman style, like everyone's traditionally used to like the square, like the stuff that they sell in Italy, like a bunchy in Rome or whatever. They use, you know, super hydrated dough and stuff. You know, like the slices with the big holes, like the crater, like area. I mean, I don't understand why people love that. It doesn't equate to a great pizza. You're eating air. That's what I thought. It's like more air. It's like less stuff in it. Of course it's going to be light.
Mm-hmm.
It's focaccia. But anyway, that's what I call pizza taglio. But his pizza is great. He makes a triangle version of Roman stuff. It's like a hybrid of New York and Roman stuff, or Italian stuff. It's really good.
Wow.
Yeah,
okay.
And he uses high-end stuff. Really not that many. I can't, yeah.
Only the two.
And mine, yeah.
And yours.
Yeah. I've tried a lot. Stuff that I go back to, no. Stuff that's like, eh, yeah. A lot of eh, and a lot of like, not that good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The ones that have like blown me away, like not blown me away, but like, wow, I crave are those. I really crave those too, when I don't want to eat my own.
Mm. Oh. And so my last question for you, because you have to get back to the Lower East Side.
I got time.
Okay. But I ask every guest this, is if you could have your last meal in a restaurant, mm-hmm. where would it be? Who's invited? And you can invite anyone, you know, living, dead, celebrity, local people, anybody. And then what are you eating?
My last meal?
Mm-hmm.
You mean if I'm on death row?
Well, maybe not death row, but
no,
like...
No, I'm kidding.
You're going to die after this meal.
I mean, I don't really care about celebs. My closest friends, they know who they are. Family. Emilio Sr. from Bellotto's, the owner.
Mm.
That's it. And then it's being Bellotto's. I have it.
What are you eating?
See, I like the linguine vongole a lot. And I like the bolognese, tagliatelle. I like a lot of this food. The grilled octopus, for real. He just took it off the menu. So annoying. I went there. He took that off the menu. But if he still had it on the menu, the octopus he serves is one of the best in the city.
Mm.
Yeah, it's amazing.
You can have dishes like
baked clams, octopus, veal parm, linguine vongole. That would be my last meal in the restaurant. Now, if it was home cooking,
you can have everything.
It'd be my mom and my grandmother's food.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, rice and beans, or what we call, or breakfast, like it's called mango. It's like smashed plantains with cheese and salami. Mm.
Yeah.
And red onions, pickled red onions. That's my favorite.
What kind of cheese?
It's like, we call it queso frito, but it comes in a block. But it's really like what you get from everyone. It's like mozzarella, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Same texture, same, but we fry it. It's more for frying. You just saute it and melt it.
That sounds really good. Mashed plantains, mm-hmm. that cheese, and salami.
Yeah, fried salami and pickled red onions.
Ooh,
yeah.
That sounds really good. And what are you drinking?
Henny, white. Yeah, that's what I'm on the rocks. That's all.
That's it all night?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're not going to have
and a
hangover.
Nice wine. And whatever nice organic wine, red or white, I love. I'm more into that. And maybe finish it off with a Manhattan.
Nice.
Yeah. I like a good Manhattan, rye Manhattan.
What's your choice of rye?
I like Widow Jane rye, but that's never real. No one really has that, the Widow Jane. But if it's no other option, I just do just bullet rye.
Mm. Just bullet.
Bullet rye. Keep it simple.
Which is still a great rye.
Yeah.
Today's program is brought to you by Korin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. Korin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. Their knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant from French to Pan-Asian to American. And that is why they're located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Korin's Tribeca showroom is home to the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan, Stop by to view their exquisitely designed tableware and their rarest natural sharpening stones. They have a whole range of knife services, from repair and rust removal to reshaping and realigning. Korin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the highest quality Japanese design to your table so you can experience the unparalleled quality of Japanese craftsmanship in your home or restaurant. For more information, visit korin.com.
Next year, Heritage Radio Network is turning 10. For the last decade, we've been committed to bringing listeners around the world the very best in food radio, for free. Our small staff and incredible network of hosts work hard so that listeners can tune in each week to hear the important conversations in food policy, stay on the cutting edge of cocktail culture, and hear the latest updates in food tech. But there is no HRN without the support of listeners like you. Become a member of Heritage Radio Network today and help HRN get a strong start to our second decade. Choose from exclusive member gifts and stay in the loop on discounts to upcoming events. There's no better time to show your support. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate and wish HRN a happy birthday.
So, what do you think of food media? You've had, you know, a couple stories written about you, and do you think food media does a good job of showing New York's food scene?
I don't want to shit on all food media. I'd say, like,
I mean, that's I do it on this show all the time, so feel free.
Excuse me. I mean, I've been in this industry 20 something years now, and all most of it. I mean, I think all of it downtown. Manhattan. So I've seen it, the beginning of food media, I've seen the middle of it, I've seen what it is now. Mm-hmm. All the whole, I just, it's like a lot of people now, so a lot of people used to pay for it on the low, PR, right? Do the PR. I'm not against nobody hustling, I'm not like nobody trying to make a hustle to get money. Like, I'm not against any of that. That's not my thing. I don't hate on people that do their thing. I just don't like the fact when they use other restaurants and people to throw them under the bus. To improve their agenda or to make a mark with their agenda. I don't like that. I never like that. So a lot of them, food media, I don't consider them journalists because they don't do no research. They just go by what their friends are saying or doing and just put it up. Mm. You know what I'm saying? It's like, that's why I feel like a lot of the hate we have, I'm pretty sure we have a lot of hate for whatever reason, comes from people assuming, making a lot of assumptions. That's what they're used to. Oh, they pay for PR. Oh, they have friends in the industry, like, we're friends with all these people. Like, you know what I'm saying? I'm like, I'm not friends with nobody. I don't do nobody favors. Like, you know, my friends are my real friends. Like, I have friends in food media now because I own a business and a restaurant. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? But I don't ask them for any favors, and I don't ask them to do stuff for me, you know? A lot of people that do have these friends, they do ask for them. I know that for a fact. I've seen it. I've heard it. I've seen email. I've seen all that. Mm. But people, normal customers or people from that aren't from that world don't see that, you know? And then there's people that are like, oh, I don't pay for PR. I'm like, just because you don't give someone money or write them a check or pay them a credit, but you're giving them free food and you're buying, taking them out and you're treating them
right. A
different way, that's paying for PR as well.
Right.
You know, you're giving them VIP treatment, you're kissing their ass, you're doing all this shit. That's you're paying for it. Just because you don't hire a firm doesn't mean you're paying for it. Because you're dialing in the favors and you hook these people up, and then when you need a favor, you email them like, yo, listen, I'm opening up a spot. It'd be nice. Yeah, it's paying for, you pay for PR. Mm-hmm. You just kept it away. You put it in a safe, and now you're calling in that favor.
So what would you tell small business owners, like small restaurant owners?
To be honest with you, the food media is so strong right now. I mean, they have to. If you open up a business in New York, and because of the high rents, because of the high, payrolls are going to jump January 1st.
Yeah.
You got to budget in PR. Like, yeah. Like, believe it or not, I have to pay. If I open up another business in New York, whatever that might be, I have to pay for PR.
Right.
Because people just go by what PR says. I've been watching. It's like everyone that does PR and pays through the nose for it, they do really well.
Yeah.
Other pizzerias, the last couple of years. Restaurants have opened up. I'm like, what the fuck is this? This is a one star New York Times. What the fuck? Two stars? Like, I'm like befuddled. I'm like, this is not. And like, I have a good palate. Like, a lot of people assume that hood kids, the street, people that grow up poor don't have good palates. They actually have the best palates. Most of them, because they eat at home, they eat well because they're forced to eat well. Hmm. They don't go, people think we eat McDonald's every day. No, we don't eat McDonald's. We can't afford it. How do we afford eating McDonald's every day? We're forced to eat at home and have good home-cooked meals. You know, I mean, and I used to go to DR a lot to visit my other grandmother. And she lived on a farm, and I used to eat off the farm. You know, we didn't have chicken frozen in packs. Like, when we had chicken for dinner, they kill that chicken early in the day, chop its head up, pluck its feathers, drain its blood, then cook it. And that's how we had it. You know, we ate corn. It was corn right off the stalk. Or we go to the little grocery store that had fresh stuff from other farmers that they were bringing. They call them colbados. So other farmers, from like one farmer, you know, grows beans. Another farmer grows this rice. Another farmer has it. They sell it all at the store. Mm. You just go to the store and buy it. Wow. Whatever you were missing for your meal.
Wow.
So I mean, I grew up eating really well. So I knew what good food. I've always known. And I've always gone to restaurants that had served. Bilotto serves good food.
Mm-hmm.
So I know what good food tastes like. I have a good palate. I hope, you know. So like when people come, you know. A lot of these, on top of that, a lot of these restaurant owners that open up restaurants, they don't have good palates. They grew up in the middle of America where they eat out of Chef Boyardee cans, you know, and they come here to New York, either come with money in their pocket already or come with family that has money because, you know, New York, there's really no poor people. Outside of people that live in projects, there's not a lot of people that are poor that live in New York. Not like what it used to be. So people still have this allure that they're still poor. They're like, no, no one's poor out here. Mm-hmm. There's nobody poor. So a lot of these kids open up these restaurants, either they finagle one of these finance people to put in all these money in this restaurant, or financial people from Wall Street or whatever to open up a restaurant for them. And it's just like it's hard. It's like you got to, you know, you open up, they have all this hype behind it. They build up all this hype with the PR people that they hire, and you go in and it's disappointing. Like even newspapers are in on it, like magazines are in on it. I know some media outlets that aren't involved in this whole, like, conspiracy. I feel like it's, like, a conspiracy. I hate to say that, but it's, like...
Yeah.
If you're not... Like, I feel... But I tell, like, the advice I give people, young people, is, like, if you want to open up a business in New York and you want to make money off the bat, you have to pay for public relations, unfortunately.
Wow.
A lot of people are like, oh, word of mouth. I'm like, unless you're an established name...
That's going to take
been
too
open
long.
For 80 years, or your business has been open for 80 years and you took it over from your dad. If you're a brand-new business like I was... A brand new, unless you have a shitload of friends that can help you out when you first open.
Mm-hmm.
Like what we did, we called our own, not food friends, like actual friends that come in and support our business when we first opened. Because we got a lot of hate when we first opened. Because this is a different. So we opened up, some dude that had ties in the food industry, he owns restaurants. They didn't like the way I own, whatever. He didn't know who I was or whatever at the time. So he was just like, trying to catch beef with us. That's dead already. But anyway, he tried to undermine us by having food blogs not fuck with us.
Mm.
And I was like, wow, that's how they're going to treat a minority-owned business. That never happens in New York. When's the last time you heard a minority that like, grew up in Manhattan open up a business, a restaurant? Never. You never. Mm-hmm. It's been forever. Like, a real person, not someone from New Jersey or Long Island. Like, I grew up here. Like, I was born and raised in Manhattan. Open up a business in Manhattan. Been a long time, right?
Mm-hmm.
No one can, you know, I ask people, no one, but, you know, people assume that it's not, you know. But anyway, that's.
It seems like there's a lot to think about and.
Listen, I feel like I'm fighting a war against these people, like to be honest. Like I said, it's not all of them, but there is a lot of them. There's like 90% of them are not like newspapers, blogs, fashion blogs doing food reviews that people take serious, travel, trip, all this crap. Like,
right.
Like it's all bought. And you got to understand, you're taking the opinion of one person.
Right.
It's not a group. It's one person. So if someone at the Times of it writes one thing that's 3 or 4 stars, and it tastes, to him, it tastes amazing, but to 80% of the population, it tastes like shit. The people clamor to it. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, and food media, they still have power.
Huh?
They still have power as far as like diners and readers are concerned.
Listen, I'm next to, so our business is next to Dime, Servos, Kiki, all busy businesses.
Mm-hmm.
I open, you know, all busy businesses that have press and all that. It's, you don't think it's weird that almost at year 3 now we're starting to get a little press?
Because
they're forced to, and they don't even care about our background. They don't care. They assume it's hipster own. They assume it's, I'm a high school dropout, you know?
That's you said to me, like, you know, who would have thought a Dominican kid could open up a pizzeria in New York?
And from the hood, and proud of it, too. not the suburbs, from the hood. Grew up poor. I just want to show kids too that you can make it.
Mm-hmm.
Keep hustling. Don't listen to people. A lot of people told me it wouldn't work, and it did. There you go.
Awesome. Well, that is, I mean, that pretty much covers it. I think that's a great place to stop too. So thank you so much.
This is actually pretty good.
on the record, you want to say that the Roberta's pizza is pretty good?
The one I'm having right now?
Yes, yeah, the one you're having right now is pretty good. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Cor. Sorry, I have my mouth full.
No, you're fine.
Pause. No.
Thank you for listening. We'll catch you next week on A Hungry Society.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.